Hello and a warm welcome back to the Football Postcast brought to you by The Racing Post. To bring you the finest football betting insight this week, it's Jack Reeve with Racing Post sport journalists Mark Langdon and Jack Ogilby. The Premier League season may be over, but we still have a European final to look ahead to and, of course, the excitement of the EFL playoffs. But before any of that, gents, I thought it would be a nice idea to take a look back at the Premier League season. Of course, it's all over now. The dust has settled somewhat. Mark, great to have you back on the show. What's your overriding thoughts from the season just gone?
I think in terms of the actual sort of standard of play on the pitch, I don't think that it will go down as a vintage one necessarily. But I think from just the point of view of like keeping the show on the road and I've spoken to people that maybe are not around family and sort of living on their own, and you know, it's been a hard time for everybody, but I'd say, you know, probably more so for people like that, to have that structure of football in their lives. And while Sheffield United versus Burnley on a Sunday night might not do it for everyone, at least it was there if you wanted it to be. And I think the players don't get much credit, do they? We often lambast them for various things, but I think the way that they sort of dealt with the situation, it can't have been easy for them either. And I'm particularly thinking sort of lower down the leagues where it was chaos at certain times, wasn't it? Particularly around Christmas. And I did wonder whether we would get to finish the seasons and whether we would get to a stage where all the clubs would survive. And maybe there's still some hard and dark times ahead for some of them, but it's certainly better than I thought it would be. And for that, I'm grateful that, you know, we've managed to finish the season. And I think everybody's done well to get through it, really.
Absolutely. I think it's a season we'll look back on, Mark, in maybe a few years and go, yeah, how on earth did more clubs not go out of business? I was reading your colleague Bruce Millington's Thursday column today, and there was a point in there about Liverpool and will they be back to their best next season? Of course, they managed to secure their Champions League position for next season. What does the state of play look like at the top of the table? Of course, Manchester City won the league. Can you see that dominance being asserted for future seasons, or do you think it'll be slightly more competitive next time around?
I feel like it will be more competitive because, you know, Liverpool, it couldn't have been harder for them, really. If you can maybe lose one centre-back, but when you're losing three and four for the whole season, I think Klopp was right that there's no way that even City could cope with that. I mean, when Laporte went down for them last season, that was seen as the reason why they lost the league. Liverpool have had their own Laporte in Van Dijk, and then two others as well. And, you know, to get through it with Reece Williams and Nat Phillips as the two centre-backs, I mean, with all due respect to them, I'm not sure either is a Premier League player. So I think that they did well to qualify for the Champions League. I'm sure that Chelsea will be better for a summer under Thomas Tuchel, and also the fact that they'll probably go again in terms of spending, and all the foreign players, Havertz, Werner, Ziyech, should get better. You know, I expect them to need a bit of time to adjust, so they'll definitely be stronger for it. And then you're looking around and think Manchester United are probably, I would say, the most catchable of that sort of, if there's now a big four, if you like, I'd say that United with Solskjaer in charge are the most catchable of those four. If Tottenham or Arsenal or Leicester or even West Ham, Jack Ogilby, want to get in to the Champions League, then, you know, Man United are probably the ones that you're looking to get after.
Absolutely. Jack, in terms of the excitement on the final day of the Premier League, it was only really the top four that was yet to be decided. It was Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool and Chelsea making up the top four, Leicester missing out on the final day. If you're a Leicester fan, how are you feeling right now?
A bit of a big mixed bag, isn't it, really? Leicester City win the cup, I think it's a wonderful story, but they'll have the disappointment of dropping out of the top four for the second straight season in pretty similar circumstances. I think Leicester City, the future's bright for them, but there does seem to be a bit of a mental block maybe on making that top four. But the way they've recruited, you expect them to recruit well again. Brendan Rodgers looks like he's going to be staying put. Obviously, they've got the Jamie Vardy issue in terms of are they going to replace him long-term or go for someone maybe experienced short-term just to kind of see him out the door and work away into how they are going to replace him. But I think Leicester, the future's bright for them. I think the top four in the end is probably about right. I agree with Mark as well that Manchester United are the ones that are the most to fear, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them dropping out of the top four and Leicester being the ones to take their place next season. But, you know, I think we've got to have a bit of a moment to think about it and consider that, you know, winning the cup, if you ask the Leicester fans, I think they'd probably say winning the cup, that moment, especially with some of the fans in the stadium as well at Wembley, what a season it's been for them.
Absolutely. Let's stay with the English sides and let's talk about the Champions League final now. Saturday evening, 8 o'clock on BT Sport. It's, of course, Manchester City taking on Chelsea. Manchester City 17-20, the draw 23-10, Chelsea 10-3. Mark, how will you be approaching this game?
Oh, I think it's a really difficult betting heat. Doesn't sort of jump off the pages as there being like any massive ricks involved. I'd probably, of the two, if you said, like, would you rather back City at that price or oppose them? I think I'd edge towards opposing them, not with any great confidence, just because I think that finals are really low scoring affairs, and therefore, you know, you've got the draw on your side, haven't you? You know, if you want to lay Manchester City, Chelsea have beaten them twice under Tuchel. I'm not sure how much to read into that because the first game, City made a load of changes. Even in the second one, it wasn't the full strength team. But we've seen in the Champions League so far that Chelsea are capable of frustrating teams. They defend really well, even when they lost the FA Cup final. I mean, apart from that Tielemans shot that was flown in from outside the area, they didn't give up any chances, really, in that game. Generally, a tough team to break down. I wouldn't be surprised if this finished 1-0 either way, really, Jack. So I'm not selling it massively. I think it'll be a tense game, and I think that finals should be like that. They're not really supposed to be like 5-4, are they? And I'm pretty sure this will be a low-scoring game decided by, you know, just a set piece or something like that, really. And so I think maybe even sort of backing under 1.5 goals might be one way. I've got a couple of first scorers for you a bit later on that can add a bit of juice to it. But I think it's a really tight game.
Yeah, I mean, Champions League finals are always massive, Jack. But especially for these two sides, they'll be desperate to get their hands on the trophy. Mark's struggling to decide which way to go. Is that because, Jack, neither team have been, you know, necessarily smashing teams recently, not entirely convincing?
Yeah, but is that because they've got had half an eye on this game? I'm with Mark. I think it's going to be a really tight, cagey game. Chelsea, I've seen them over the last 3 or 4 weeks, the 3 defeats in the last 4, and not been convincing at all. I thought they played actually well in the FA Cup final without taking the chances, and it was a wonderful goal, of course, by Youri Tielemans. But before that, I saw them against Arsenal. I thought they were really poor, and they kind of got away with it a bit on the final day of the season. I don't know why I've got a soft spot for Manchester City heading into this one. I think maybe not in normal time, but maybe in extra time. I think it's almost like we're waiting for City to finally win the Champions League, and then it's the next chapter can begin. And Pep Guardiola's record in major finals also incredible. 14 of his 15 major finals he's won. I just think they've got the edge on paper, and I think they'll just have it because I'm just not convinced by Chelsea. Tuchel's done a magnificent job, but maybe they're just running out of steam.
Yeah, this is the thing, Mark, isn't it, with Manchester City? It feels as if the last sort of 5 years of their planning has been based around winning a Champions League, and this is the opportunity.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's not like, I don't know, when, say, Tottenham reached the final or, you know, when other underdogs have got there, you know, because it will come again. You know, if they don't win it this year, they'll next year, or if not next year, one of the years after, as long as the money's there, you know, eventually it will come good for them. But they will want to, you know, to get over the line in that regard. I quite like the idea of maybe it being won in extra time or something like that, what Jack was just talking about, because I think what we've seen with City is just their patience now, and they're not sort of this side that maybe when Guardiola first came in that was a little bit chaotic and, you know, that you could win games sort of 5 or 6, but you might also get done on the counter-attack. He's kind of shut the counter-attack right off for big games. I mean, I know they played Newcastle and, you know, Brighton recently, but the title was done and there wasn't much motivation there. In big games, he seems to have really reined it in. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they, you know, just slowly plotted their way, you know, towards trying to win the game. And that's why I'd be sort of looking to oppose them maybe in the 90-minute market, because they don't need to win it in 90 minutes. You can take the 120, and they've got a lot of options off the bench. Chelsea have as well. But with Chelsea, I feel like they're all of a pretty similar standard. You know, like you, Pulisic or Ziyech, doesn't really matter who plays out of them two. They've both got different skill sets. But I look at that City bench and you go, Raheem Sterling could come on. You know, could Aguero or Jesus? Like, that feels a bit stronger to me. So maybe that's where the game is won, and it is in, you know, possibly extra time that City's just sheer strength in depth really gets them over the line. But I think it's worth bearing in mind for anybody playing the 90 minutes that, you know, if it's a draw after 70, and we saw that in the Europa League final on Wednesday night, you don't need to push because you know you've got that extra half an hour. And that's why I always think sort of the draw is a big runner, you know, in cup finals, because it's not just about the 90 minutes.
Yeah, you mentioned there the Europa League final. Let's take a quick look back at that, Jack.
Jack, sorry, can I just do a couple of first scorer tips?
Yeah, go for it.
I just think because it's set pieces are massive, and we saw that in the Europa League final, and if there is only one goal to be scored, somebody like the two I looked at were really big prices, about 33, 40 to 1, were Diaz and Rudiger. I think that they're, you know, definitely worth considering, you know, if you're looking for an interest on the game.
And when you play the sort of big prices in the first goal scorer markets, Mark, do you just go straight win or each way?
It depends on sort of how many goals I think there'll be in the game and sort of what the goal expectancy is. I think in this type of game, I'd lean towards first goal scorer, because there might not be. I think that there's a pretty strong potential for there to be no more than one goal in the game.
There we go. Jack, have you got any other selections for this, or should we take a look at the Europa League?
Well, I thought, again, the City to win in extra time, but also the first goal scorer, Ruben Dias, would have been a pick for me. He's had such a great season in a tight game. Someone as strong and powerful and determined as he is, I think he's one to watch.
There we go. Yeah, there'll be comprehensive coverage on the Racing Post Sport. Just head over to racingpost.com and click on sport. There'll be absolutely tons of stuff to read through on there. Yeah, a quick glance back at the Europa League final. It was won by Villarreal, beating Manchester United. Jack, what did you make of it? I was, you know, scrolling through Twitter throughout the game. There were moans and groans. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it as well. It was a bit of a chess match, wasn't it? It was inevitable that Villarreal were going to try and make Manchester United break them down, and he couldn't quite do it. I thought Man United were probably about a 6 out of 10 on the night. Didn't quite turn up. I thought it was quite telling as well that Solskjaer resisted the urge to make any sort of changes, where maybe you could say he doesn't fancy the players on the bench. You could also argue that a more experienced manager, Unai Emery, almost had a plan for the second half, and they're almost, he knew when certain players were going to come on and go off, like he withdrew both fullbacks at the same time. I thought that was quite interesting. I was also shocked by Villarreal's price before the game. I just remember looking last week, and they were absolutely massive for a team with Unai Emery in charge. He's the absolute master of the Europa League. Always sad to end on penalty shootout, I think, but David De Gea, he didn't quite convince me trying to save them. He looked a bit bored trying to take his own penalty. I just think it's a sad way to end. But for me, Villarreal were deserved winners.
Yeah, Mark. I mean, De Gea's penalty record has been talked about a lot. It's absolutely woeful. Someone's record who isn't which isn't woeful, is Emery's in the Europa League. Absolutely phenomenal.
He is. I mean, it's one of those, it's a backhanded compliment, isn't it, in some respects, that you sort of be the master of the Europa League, because you are, there has to be usually some kind of failure, almost, not for Villarreal, but, you know, at other times when he was at Sevilla, you know, I think there were occasions when they felt like they, you know, could have maybe pushed on and just ended up in the Europa League again. And sort of, it was a bit like with Manchester United, had they won, I'm not sure they could have celebrated it that wildly, because, you know, something had to go wrong in their season for them to be in it in the first place, you know. And it does make me laugh with United that like all of the ex-United players, and there are a lot of them on TV, it's hard to get away from them. They're always like, they're searching around, wondering what the problem is at Manchester United. And yet not one of them goes, well, hold on, we've got a manager in charge that no other team probably in the top half would go anywhere near. I mean, it's the elephant in the room. And I'm not saying that Solskjaer can't win big trophies with Manchester United, because I think the wage bill and everything like that means that they can. But you're making it harder for yourself. You know, you're going into battle with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer up against, and I'm talking domestically here, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, you know, Thomas Tuchel. You know, you are making life harder for yourself not having an elite coach. And Antonio Conte's just become on the market. I mean, Manchester United should be all over somebody like that, you know, but I don't know. They seem happy. They seem happy enough. And the fans seem, I would say the match-going fans anyway, seem happy enough with Ollie in charge. So, you know, football's for them. So I suppose it's right to keep him. But I mean, just as an outsider looking in, I mean, that's the obvious problem to me.
I suppose it's a complicated one, isn't it, Mark? It's that, what do you feel your identity of a club is? I was baffled when Chelsea hired Frank Lampard as manager, because I'd seen the poor job he'd done at Derby, and suddenly Chelsea fans are expecting him to step up, and it didn't work. And the improvement we've seen under Tuchel has been very apparent. The thing I couldn't work out, Jack, was just the stubbornness not to make substitutions. They looked so leggy, and you looked at that, the extra time, as a real opportunity for Manchester United to go on and win the game. Villarreal were sat back, they were deep, there was opportunity for Manchester United to take the game to them, and it just never happened.
Yeah, I thought they totally let Villarreal back into the game. And we were talking about identity there, but Real Madrid were awful for 3 years and won the Champions League 3 years in a row with no sort of identity. They just won games, and we look back at them now as this great team, and obviously they had a great midfield in Cruz, Casemiro and Modric, but Ramos at the back was very good. Navas was a bit shaky in goal. Benzema only really finding his form now. It's strange that we talk about identity, and Manchester United fans seem to be obsessed with this identity thing, but I don't think they didn't win last night. I'm getting myself tongue-tied here, but if they'd won last night, they'd look back on it in 5 years' time as some sort of great victory for the club, whereas it was a bit of a mixed game in that I thought they were totally tactically outfought by Villarreal and Emery. Villarreal waited for that set piece, which Manchester United are vulnerable on, got the goal, sat back, and then, yeah, it was just strange watching it. Like, you look at the subs, they had options on the bench, and they obviously had a plan for the penalty shootout, because all those players came on and took the first three or four penalties and all scored. And I thought Daniel James was the one that was screaming out to me, someone who could stretch a tired defence. Like, Raul Albiol is getting on a bit, real class act, but not pacey at all. And you thought, just put James on him, run down the channel, make him do something. But I thought they played in front of Villarreal. I thought it was just such a disappointing game from a Manchester United point of view.
Yeah, it has to be said, the quality of the penalty shootout was absolutely superb, though. Absolutely. Some unbelievable penalties in there. I did think that Solskjaer might have opted for the Tim Krul-like substitution with Henderson coming off the bench for the shootout. I think he's saved six penalties since De Gea has last saved one. But there we go. It's time to look at the EFL playoffs now.
For the best Euro 2020 betting insight, make sure you pick up a copy of the Racing Post on the 3rd of June. Inside, you'll find a 72-page pullout packed with betting advice ahead of the much-awaited tournament. There will be tipping from Mark Landon, Dan Childs, and more Racing Post journalists, as well as former players. Don't miss the Euro 2020 betting guide on the 3rd of June, brought to you by The Racing Post.
Welcome back to the Football Postcast, brought to you by The Racing Post. Jack Reeve, Mark Langdon and Jack Ogilby with you today. A very exciting weekend, and leading into Bank Holiday Monday, we've got the EFL playoffs. Let's start with the Championship game. It's Brentford against Swansea. Brentford 17-20, the draw 23-10, Swansea 7-2. Mark, I know you were very keen on Brentford from the off, and they have been superb, but Swansea, a tricky side to play against.
They are tricky, and they've sort of outperformed a lot of their sort of data and bits like that. And I think that obviously goalkeeper Woodman's done well, and then you've got Ayew up front, who could probably play, I'd say, sort of bottom half Premier League quite comfortably. So you've got that those sort of big people in both boxes. Chelsea Loney as well, centre half, has done well for them. So in both boxes, I think Swansea have shown what they're about, really, and they've drawn a couple of times against Brentford already in the league this season, in the regular season. But ultimately, I do think that Brentford are, at least on paper, a significantly better team. I know there was only 7 points between them, but Brentford had a massive old wobble at one stage. I think that put paid to their automatic chances. But you know, for most of the season, I think that they've looked like a promotion team in waiting. They did last season, and then they fluffed their lines at Wembley. And I know that will bring a certain amount of nerves to the situation. And 9 times they've been in the playoffs and they've never gone up. But I'm not sure whether I read too much into like that psychological stuff. I just look at the two teams on paper and think that Brentford are quite a bit better.
In terms of the prices, Mark, how will you be playing it if you are betting in this?
Yeah, I think Brentford are fair enough in 90 minutes, actually. I think that what happened last year against Fulham, if anything, will be a good lesson to them. You know, they kind of waited for things to happen in that game, didn't play their natural way. And I expect them to sort of be on the front foot. And if they are, I think they've got the quality up front to win the game in 90.
Yeah, I mean, they're packed with quality up front, Jack, at Brentford. I was impressed with Swansea, though, in their semi-finals games against Barnsley. I really like Barnsley. I like the way they press. They usually create a lot of chances with how direct they are. And they didn't really get a sniff against Swansea. And I just look at that and think, if Swansea can kind of replicate that against Brentford in 90, they've got every chance here.
I think that'll be the game plan from Steve Cooper. He seems to be a really good coach, doesn't he? Every time I see Swansea, they always look really well set up and, like I say, well coached. But I'm kind of with Mark on this one. I just fancy Brentford. They just look like a quality outfit. Yes, Swansea, as I say, well coached. And also, Freddie Woodman's got a really good record, 21 clean sheets this season, both the games this season finishing 1-1 as well. But Brentford, they've got this thing of the nearly team, and Mark mentioned the playoff record, but I just thought they were so much better than all the other teams in the playoffs coming into it, really. I think the top two were rightly went up, and Brentford weren't too far behind them. They've also got Ivan Toney, 32 goals this season, including in the semi-finals as well. I fancy Brentford in 90 minutes, maybe 1-0 with Toney the goal scorer.
Yeah, hard to argue against any of that, but really looking forward to it. Worth a mention, Mark Guéhi at the back for Swansea. I know Mark alluded to him, but absolutely exceptional.
I'd forgotten his name, Jack. Thank you.
Yeah, no, he really is something special. I'm sure Chelsea fans are watching him very closely. Let's take a look at League One now. And this, in terms of the odds anyway, is a much closer comparison. Blackpool against Lincoln, 6-5 the home side, or Blackpool, 11-5 the draw, 23-10 about Lincoln. Mark, I'll admit I haven't watched too much of either of these teams this season, but I know that Blackpool are one of the form sides going into this.
Yeah, I do a show with Scott Minto every Wednesday for Racing Post, and he also worked for Cholton TV, and he told me ages ago that Blackpool were the best team he'd seen at the Valley. They beat Cholton 3-0 on that occasion. Cholton ended up with 9 men, but even before the 9 men, he said that the 3-0 flattened Cholton and that the Blackpool were a team to watch. At that stage, they weren't flying quite as high as they are now. So kudos to Scott for that one. And sort of from that moment, I sort of kept an eye on Blackpool. And I think two defeats in 24, dismantled Oxford. The game was up, wasn't it, in the first leg, and then just managed to sort of see it home. I know that they conceded three goals in the second leg against Oxford, but I think that that's like an unnatural type of game because Oxford are having to really go for it. That maybe lent itself to a high scoring game. Blackpool really strong at the back, got Stewart and Dougal that sit just in front. And then, you know, a lot of their forward players are just in great nick at the moment. You know, Embleton, but I think Sunderland fans are still bemused as to why he keeps on playing for other teams in League One rather than them. But, you know, he's somebody capable of the spectacular. The same is true of Yates as well. And Sims has been scoring loads of goals. I think that Appleton has coached his socks off to get Lincoln this far. And so I wouldn't want to disrespect them and say that, you know, they can't win or anything like that. I just think that the Blackpool are the more likely winners. And I thought they'd maybe be a little bit shorter, actually, in the 90-minute price.
Yeah, I must admit, Jack, that was the thing that stood out for me, the price about Blackpool, considering how good they've been in recent months.
Yeah, same for here. They've picked up more points than any other team in the final 25 league games of the season. I can't quite drop the names in like Mark can, but we've got another colleague in Bobby Jackson, who's actually a Blackpool fan. And I rang him up last night. He was saying that he really fancied them after seeing them obviously win the first leg against Oxford. He said it was a bit of a mess the second leg. Also a bit of history in this game, isn't there, with Michael Appleton being the manager of Blackpool for just 11 games at one point. It was a bit of a strange surroundings him leaving. I think Appleton is a really good coach. There's also been links with him going in the summer. I think Lincoln's win as well over Sunderland was a bit of a statement of intent, but at the same time, Blackpool, it's always fun watching them play. I think they're in really good form and I really fancy them on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, Mark, I know, you know, we've spoken about the Champions League final and do you play it in the 90-minute market? Do you go just to win the game? What's your approach in the playoff games?
Yeah, you know, in the playoff games, I feel like there are no rules in the playoff games. I mean, it all depends, right? They tend to fall into two categories of, like, if there's an early goal in a playoff game, like, they can be absolutely spectacular. And then, but like, the closer it gets towards 90, like, the teams tense up. But I tend to think that, you know, both and all of the teams actually will look to grasp the occasion. And it's the first leg of the semi-finals that are traditionally very low scoring. And then we tend to get better games as they go on. So I don't think it's quite the same as the Champions League final, and, you know, there's a lot at stake, but it's a different type of pressure, I think, to what a Champions League final is. And, you know, the Champions League final, you've got, like, you know, again, with all due respect to maybe some of these, like, League One and League Two coaches, it's not Guardiola against Tuchel, is it?
Without disrespecting them, but you have disrespected them.
I mean, you've got two guys there that are, you know, obsess over the opposition and would have, I wouldn't even like to guess how many sort of backroom staff they've got that have analysed every single sort of bit of the opposition. Somebody like Appleton particularly, or like I say, I think has done a fantastic coaching job. There's only so much he can do, you know, like there's only so much you can do at that level. And so I tend to think that it's not quite about, you know, completely shutting down the opposition.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Let's have a look at the League Two game then. That's on Monday at 3 o'clock on Sky Sports. Morecambe take on Newport County. 17-10 Morecambe, 2-1 the draw, 6-4 Newport County. Jack, we'll start with you on this one. I know Morecambe were an absolutely massive price to be up there this season. They've done exceptionally well. Newport County have been solid throughout. Which team will be promoted here?
Well, Morecambe must be kicking themselves. It was that late 1-0 defeat against Bolton, wasn't it, that killed their automatic hopes in the end, finishing a point short of the automatic. Good first leg win over Tranmere before drawing 1-1 on their own patch second time round. Newport drama as they got through against Forest Green. I just got a fancy for Newport, I have to say, in the 90 minutes as well. They won both sides between the sides, the both games between the sides, rather, this season. So they must be confident. Also, on the similar lines of Michael Appleton, I think Mickey Flynn, I saw him as a player at Bradford City, and he was always, he had something extra about him, and maybe could have done gone a bit higher than he played in the end. But he seems like a good young manager who's sifted through a few different teams, even during his time since taking over in 2017 at Newport. He filters out bad players, gets in good ones. He seems like a clever bloke, and I quite fancy them.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I think I'll be going Newport. Draw no bet, I think, is fair enough on this one. Wouldn't be surprised if this sort of maybe did go, you know, and certainly in terms of it being a close game. Morecambe, I saw Morecambe's first game under Derek Adams. They were at Crawley. If you would have said to me then that he would be in a playoff final so soon after, I mean, you just couldn't have believed it, really. Even in League Two, where you know you can change a lot over a summer, I think the job he's done has just been fantastic. But you know, 24% possession in the first leg against Tranmere when they won, even when they sort of drew the second leg again, they gave up a lot of the ball, 34% that they only had in that game, and it always makes me nervous when you back a team like that, you know, that just wants to sit back. And I feel like if they don't score first, like how do they go and chase the game? And that would be my concern for Morecambe. Whereas we know that Newport, as they showed against Forest Green, they can do it both ways. You know, they had to recover from that setback, you know, of conceding the two early goals. And what I like probably most about Newport is how well they've dealt with pressure situations. Look at their cup runs of recent years, you know, that they've really stepped up. And so I'd be more, I think I've probably got more trust in them dealing with the occasion than what I have Morecambe. I think it'll be relatively close, but I'll go for Newport draw, no bet.
And how much, Mark, are you looking at fans' influence on these games? Obviously, they're allowed back in, of course, limited numbers, but does that sway decision making slightly?
Not overly, not when it's sort of effectively 50-50. I mean, Newport probably have got, I'd say, probably a more boisterous set of supporters maybe than Morecambe. No, I was sort of looking for that more when teams were playing at home on like the final weekend or, you know, the final two games of the Premier League season. I was at a final once when Millwall played Wigan, and Millwall had about 50,000 there and Wigan had about 8 people. And, you know, maybe you can read a bit into that, but not at this level when it's relatively 50-50.
I just find it really, you know, fascinating that there'll be certain players up and down the divisions that won't have ever played in front of fans. Like, you know, the younger guys that have made debuts during the spells where no fans have been allowed. It's mind blowing, really. Right. Any other games across divisions that might be happening that we've got any interest in? I know there's not a massive selection to go at. Jack, any others you're looking at?
Well, going down into the National League, I quite fancy Notts County to beat Bromley just because they're in really good form. Bromley need to win to have any chance of getting into the playoffs, but County are unbeaten in 7 and I fancy them to go up in the end. It probably sounds a bit lazy because they're a big name and they've got some decent names in the squad as well. But Cal Wootton's got 15 goals for the season. He's in good form. They've got a classy playmaker and Jim O'Brien. I think they'll get the business done this weekend and overall as well. I can see them going up.
Mark, what about you?
No, not for me, Jack. I'm all sort of the heads in the Euros now, outside of the playoffs and Champions League.
Yeah, we'll get onto that very shortly. Let's get a nap from each of you from the games we've talked about. Mark, what's your nap?
Newport draw, no bet, Jack.
Okay, and Jack?
Brentford to win. I think Ivan Toney will be the difference.
Okay, 2 picks from the playoffs. Right, let's have a quick look ahead to the Euros now. That's approaching at rapid speed. I'm sure Mark has been thinking about this tournament for many years. There's a massive pullout coming in the Racing Post. I'm sure Mark will mention that. So that's well worth a look at when it is published. Much excitement surrounding this tournament, Mark. Much awaited for many. Let's get your kind of thoughts going into it.
Yeah, so the Racing Post pullout will be in the newspaper on the 3rd. So Thursday, the 3rd of June is the one that you're looking out for there. All your sort of usual Racing Post people that you come to expect. Plus, we've got many sort of recruits. So keep your eyes peeled for that. A lot of good sort of European football expert journalists and some players that have played in the tournament as well. So
scouting mission, have you?
Yeah, yeah, I have. Yeah, I won't mention the budget to the finance department just yet. We'll I've gone on a Harry Redknapp style spending spree to bring in the best. But I think that it's a tournament that a couple of months ago I think I was pretty nervous about, because I felt that all the players would just be absolutely exhausted and it would be one of them tournaments, you know, that just was terrible. And it still might be, I suppose. But as the squad lists are getting announced and, you know, fans have returned to the stadiums, I feel like that can carry the tournament. Around the continent, like, people have just been locked up for a long old time. And, you know, for some people, at least, to be able to go out and watch top level sort of, you know, international tournament football, it feels exciting. It really does. And I'm starting to get a real sense that actually the tournament I anticipated a couple of months ago maybe, you know, won't be played out, and it can be a great summer of football again.
And have you had any anti-post plays so far?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's one team that I've liked for a while as outsiders, and that's Denmark. You know, I just think with a European Championship, you're always more likely to get sort of surprise winners. I don't know why that is, but if you go through sort of the cast list, I mean, Denmark themselves are a good example, aren't they? You know, I don't think they were quite off the beach. It's often said they were on the beach in 1992. I think there was always a chance they could come in and sort of play in the tournament. But they hadn't qualified, and then they managed to win it. 96, you had the Czech Republic going all the way to the final. We've had Greece winning it at three-figure odds. When Portugal won it, 5 years, I think he said 4 years ago. It was 5 years ago, wasn't it? Yeah, they weren't fancied. I know they had Cristiano Ronaldo in the team, but they really weren't fancied at all. And so I do think you can get a team that can kind of just plot their way through a Euros. I think it's because it's such a there's not a huge gulf between, say, the very best teams and like the teams that are 10th, 11th in the market. And on any day that, you know, they can beat each other. And I'm looking at Denmark in the last World Cup. They were beaten on penalties by Croatia, who then went all the way to the final. So it's not a bad form line. They've absolutely sort of blitzed World Cup qualifying under their new manager. And then I went through the team. You know, Kasper Schmeichel in goal. Then you've got like Kjær and Christensen. Kjær had a brilliant season for Milan. Christensen, really solid at Chelsea. You know, Højbjerg, not a player I'm massively like at Tottenham, but I know most of my fellow Spurs fans absolutely love him. He's a solid enough person that just plays in front of that defence. Eriksen finished the season brilliantly, for Inter. Delaney plays for Borussia Dortmund. One of the fullbacks is at Atalanta. Poulsen plays for Leipzig. Braithwaite's at Barcelona. Yeah, this is not a team made up of like loads of players that, you know, play for FC Copenhagen anymore. A lot of them are playing real high-level European football. It's not a bad draw. I'm not saying they'll be my main tip, but if you're looking for somebody, I think, was it Steve Palmer says, a working man's price, they would sort of be the ones, I think.
So you're half Danish this summer then, Mark?
Why not? Decent beer. Great. You know, why not?
Excellent. Jack, it's often overwhelming looking at a tournament like this, isn't it, in the lead up. But have you pinpointed any fancies so far?
Well, it's tough to look past France, isn't it? The depth is just crazy. I think Portugal, in that funny sense, that they've got a better group of players than they did 5 years ago. Italy back in the game. I think if you're looking for a bit of an upset, neither Spain nor Germany particularly convinced me. There's some good players, but I'm not quite sure where they all fit in. Spain are a young side, and Germany just look a bit of a mess, and with Lowe's departure hanging over them, it just seems like a bit of a hangover for them. If you're going to look for something a bit interesting, I think Ukraine could actually go far. They topped their qualifying group, which included Portugal. They've got a decent draw as well. The Netherlands, I think they'll top the group. But Austria, they flopped in 2016. And from what I've seen from them since then, they don't look like a side who can open other teams up. And North Macedonia are the real minnows of the competition. Maybe they lack a good strike in the Ukraine, but the attack in numbers. I also think Alexander Zinchenko is someone to look out for this summer. Obviously, he plays left back. He'll probably play left back for Man City on a Saturday night, but he plays through the middle for Ukraine, and I think that's his best position.
Some dark horses in Denmark and Ukraine. As Mark mentioned earlier, the 3rd of June, take some pennies down the newsagents and get yourself the Euro 2020 pullout. It's absolutely exceptional. How many pages is it, Mark? It's about 170, isn't it?
No, I think it's 72 time. Yeah, we are slacking. but no, the good news is, because I do get some people go, oh, you say it's 72 pages, but there's loads of adverts. Not as many adverts as the commercial team would like, but more. That means more for the readers to enjoy.
And that's why we haven't got our bonuses, is it?
Yeah, maybe.
There we go. The football podcast done for another week. A massive thank you to Mark Langdon and Jack Ogilby. A very exciting bank holiday weekend for football fans. And of course, the Euros coming up. We'll have so much more on that in the weeks to come. If you have enjoyed it, then make sure you subscribe on your podcast app of choice and leave it a 5-star review. We'll be back next Thursday for another football podcast. If you're having a bet, do so responsibly. We'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.